We apparently have had a quorum. We've had 9 people check in. So, Governor Kegel, have you looked at the minutes? You've read the minutes? You'd like to move the minutes, wouldn't you?
Sure, Mr. Chair, but it's Kegel. I always have to say that because then I have to remind my husband I should have just stuck with Anderson. So, but yes, I'd like to move the minutes.
Are there any additions or corrections to the minutes? Seeing none. All those in favor of passing the minutes signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Hey, those opposed, same sign. We now have minutes. We have a couple other things here. On item number 4, I'm going to move. These are bonding bills that we're moving directly to the bonding committee. Well, actually, they're being returned to the Ways and Means for the recommendation to be re-referred to capital investment. All those in favor of the motion of moving House File 2105, 2106, 2143, and 2164 to Ways and Means signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. We've done a lot of work today. We've already moved 5 bills. Like that. And today we're going to do a bunch of Department of Employment and Economic Development bills, if I'm reading this correctly. We have House File 414, Representative Stevenson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Good morning.
Good morning.
Mr. Chair, I would like to move that House File 414 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus. And further, I have an author's amendment. I believe it is the A2 amendment. So I would move the A2 amendment.
All right.
And Mr. Chair, if I could briefly explain the A2 amendment, just as 2 things. One is it changes the name of this program. I'm a lawyer, so I kind of like business competitive development. You know, it's a great thing, but I'm told that it doesn't have just quite the right ring to it that makes it very attractive to a lot of people. So some of the people who work in this program wanted to give it a more compelling name and came up with the SPARK program. And so despite my lawyerly sensibilities, I'm on board with that. And the second thing is it adds immigrant-owned businesses to the target for this particular program. This program already targets a number of groups, including minority-owned, women-owned, veteran-owned businesses located in greater Minnesota, high-tech industries. It also tracks Native American-owned businesses served by this, as well as businesses owned by people with disabilities. And we'll talk more about this in a minute, but it's had a number of success in those areas. And so this is just adding one more group to that. I understand that both the stakeholders and the department don't have an objection to adding that group.
Fine by me. I kind of belong in the same boat as yours. Not sure putting a funny, a sparkly name on a program really helps a ton, but you know, they wanted a brand new name for this committee. This is the same name this committee had 20 years ago. So you can kind of tell I'm both stuck in the mud. But if you would so like, all those in favor of the A2 amendment, signify by saying aye.
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 All those opposed, same sign. Bills in condition that you would like.
Sometimes a fresh coat of paint does a world of good. So. Mr. Chair, thank you very much. To the underlying bill, this bill funds a program that's had a lot of support from this committee, from the legislature over a long period of time, and that's extremely beneficial to small businesses throughout Minnesota. Of course, small businesses are critical to our economy. They contribute in numerous different ways, but a lot of small businesses need just a little bit of help at the outside to get going with some of that technical assistance and advice, how you take your idea and make it a reality. And this program is really a great way for our entrepreneurs and small businesses in Minnesota to get that initial push off the ground. And they work all across the state, including, not that I'm biased, but in my neck of the woods up in Champlin, there's a great small business up there, the Minnesota Play Cafe, which is an indoor play space that was helped out by this program and is the father of two children under the age of six enduring a cold and vicious winter. I just got to say that any program that helps with indoor play spaces is a godsend. But it's been a great a use of taxpayer dollars because it's leveraged so much additional investment from outside groups. So over the past 5 years, it's leveraged an average of $65 million a year. Base funding for this program, I believe, was $2.85 million in the last biennium. So, you know, $1.4 million a year, getting $65 million a year in private financing. That's a pretty phenomenal ratio. House File 414 would increase the base by adding $1 million to the base for the whole biennium. And the program has been very successful. The demand is there, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, to make good use of that money. So I think it is a very good investment of state tax dollars. But you don't have to take my word for it. There's a number of people here today to testify in favor of this bill, and I, with the chair's indulgence, I turn it over to them right now.
Good morning. Please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Chair Mahoney, members of the committee, my name is Carrie Johnson. I am the Senior Policy Advisor at the Metropolitan Consortium of Community Developers, or MCCD. Thank you for the opportunity to testify this morning in support of House File 414 to increase funding for the competitive grant program with the A2 amendment, the SPARC competitive grant program. I want to thank Representative Stevenson for championing this bill and to all the co-authors, especially those on the committee. MCCD is a membership organization that represents community developers covering everything from affordable housing, credit building, to small business development. As an organization, not only do we work in close partnership with the Minnesota Asset Building Coalition, but we are also a member. Some of the organizations in the coalition, like MCCD, as well as the African Development Center and Women Venture, who you'll hear more about later, work directly with entrepreneurs and small business owners offering a combination of affordable financing and business technical assistance to help start or expand successful businesses. House File 414 directly supports critical funding for small business technical assistance. This includes everything from evaluating and strengthening business plans, crafting marketing strategies, cash flow management coaching, ensuring compliance with regulatory requirements, strategic planning, and helping to access or identify affordable financing opportunities. Sometimes it's also persuading clients not to invest their own or others' capital in a business idea that's either too risky or if the entrepreneur is not quite ready. This funding provides entrepreneurs with the opportunity to have a qualified and trusted business advisor to support their success from the start, as well as ongoing support as needed. The competitive grant program awards funding biannually to nonprofit organizations offering business technical assistance to entrepreneurs in targeted groups that may face unique barriers to business opportunities. These targeted groups currently include, as you heard from Representative Stevenson, rural residents, low-income people, veterans, women, minorities, Native Americans, and people with disabilities. However, with the A2 amendment, immigrants would also be added to this list. The competitive nature of the program allows DEED to not only ensure that funding is distributed evenly geographically, but a requirement of receiving this funding is reporting relevant statistics. This allows organizations and the state to measure which populations the funding is serving, among other things, and where increased attention may be needed. The base appropriation, as Representative Stevenson said, is $2.85 million per biennium. It's the same amount that it was in 2012 when the program was established, and this bill would increase that $1 million per biennium. We're confident these funds are in demand because funding applications in the last grant round were exceeded $8.5 million. On average, over the last 5 years, the program has enabled nonprofit community economic development organizations to serve on average 4,300 entrepreneurs per year and leverage about $65 million in private financing, which definitely seems like a great return on investment. You can see from the list of the most recent grant awards that was provided to you, I believe, in your packets, that organizations receiving this funding represent diverse geographic areas as well as significant cultural diversity. Thank you so much for the opportunity to testify today. Happy to answer any questions you have now or after the other testifiers.
Next on the list is Emma. I'm going to mess up your last name. I can't pronounce stuff for nothing. So please introduce yourself for the tape and proceed.
Good morning, Chair Mahoney, members of the committee. My name is Emma Kasiga, and I'm a program manager at Africa Development Center. ADC is a nonprofit focused on championing African immigrants and refugees, helping them overcome barriers to financial security through credit building, home buyer education, and what I'm about to talk to you today, entrepreneurship and starting businesses. Additionally, our mission is focused on building wealth and increasing reinvestment in the African communities, in the communities of African immigrants call home here in Minnesota. Our staff is made of highly qualified and talented individuals from an array of African nations that bring a passion to their work and represent a wide-ranging areas of entrepreneurship and small business proficiency. Our expertise has helped ADC become the leader in micro-lending to Minnesota small businesses, as well as the leader in providing critical business advising and technical assistance. Our technical assistance work has been supported through a business development competitive grant program at DEED. ADC started in 2004 with main focus of helping individuals from African immigrant communities take their economic fate in their own hands through self-employment. ADC continues to grow because of statewide demands to help meet the needs of in the communities, both in the metro areas as well as in greater Minnesota. Because of growing African immigrant population around the state, ADC now has offices in Rochester and Wilmer, and we also help entrepreneurs in St. Cloud and Marshall, as well as throughout the Twin Cities metro area. As a mainstream community development corporation continue to lack resources, funds, and cultural understanding to expand their services to meet the complex needs of African immigrants, ADC has been able to step in and fill those gaps, including business consulting and technical assistance. For example, Mohammed Haji had graduated from auto body mechanics and needed to start an auto body shop. He was tired of being turned down without explanation. He decided to come to ADC. He had bad credit, and his goals were too ambitious. We worked on his credit and assisted him with a newer plan, which is getting towards his bigger plan. Today, almost 4 years later, Mohammed Haji has two towing trucks and saving his way to obtain his own auto body shop. ADC has not only helped to provide small opportunities for small business owners, but many times these businesses help to meet the crucial community needs. A good example of this is of Mr. Muhammad A. Mohammed, who got frustrated because he could not find a reliable daycare provider in Wilmer. He decided to start one to serve the community. With the help of City of Wilmer and ADC, today the community boasts this brand new open facility with an investment of $500,000 in the City of Wilmer. ADC also helped Dr. Mohamud Afghashe, an internal medicine doctor, to open a community clinic that now provides high-quality and culturally responsive urgent health care services in the growing African community I urge the legislature to support HF 414 and increase funding for the Business Development Competitive Grant Program because it's a proven program that works. I want to thank Representative Stevenson for carrying this bill and for the opportunity to testify today. I'm happy to take to answer any questions you may have.
Please stick around, and if there's questions, we'll get them at the end. Why don't we have our next testifier?
Hey. Good morning, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Thank you for the opportunity to testify on House File 414. My name is Katie Kimball, and I own and run Twin Cities Trapeze Center on the east side of St. Paul. We offer flying trapeze lessons and experiences to anyone interested in learning. No experience required. We're a great indoor play space, representing the students. And, in 2003, I ran away to join the circus, as one does, and spent the next 10 years in the San Francisco Bay Area studying, teaching, and performing circus arts. In 2012, I moved back to my home state of Minnesota with the dream of opening a flying trapeze school. I knew a great deal about teaching, inspiring, and motivating people flying through the air, but very little about how to run a business. At first, I tried the old circus trick of leap first, ask questions later, but it became clear that I was going to need help if I was going to launch a viable business to support myself and my son. After a few missteps, I was eventually referred to Women Venture, which quite literally changed my life. Women Venture provided me with startup capital and business support that turned me from a trapeze artist to an entrepreneur. I met with Amy, my original mentor at Women Venture, and we looked through my business plan and tightened it up. Women Venture then helped me access the affordable financing I needed to open my doors, and we hosted our first flying trapeze class on February 8th, 2013. During the first year, I met one-on-one with Women Venture staff to discuss primarily financial strategies. I also attended seminars on marketing and social media. But it wasn't just about getting launched. The continuing business support they offered and continue to offer took a huge burden off of the single mama's shoulders. For the first several years, it was just me running the show as the owner, lead instructor, manager, accounting, HR, and advertising. Knowing there was a reliable and credible source I could turn to was not just a practical solution, but a source of comfort during those stressful startup years. Women Venture connected me with an HR advisor, tax advisor, and legal specialist, all essential business components, yet far too much for one woman to handle alone. Today, my business supports me and my son. I have 16 employees who are paid between $15 and $30 an hour, and we run 7 days a week. We've parlayed our success into performing and educational partnerships with the Minnesota Children's Museum, St. Paul Public Library, Children's Theater Company, and the Science Museum of Minnesota. We're now stable enough financially that we're able to offer low-cost programming to disadvantaged and disabled youth in an effort to make circus accessible to everyone. To be clear, none of this would have been possible without the support and faith of Women Venture and their dedicated team of staff and volunteers. House File 414 would increase funding for nonprofit organizations like Women Venture all across the state to offer business support to entrepreneurs and contribute to the success of small businesses that otherwise might never get off the ground. I hope you'll support the bill. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you. I have a question. Do you do group lessons?
We do. It's an excellent team-building experience, Mr. Chairman.
In the morning?
We'll be there at 8 a.m. ready for you.
All right. Thank you. Are there any questions for the testifiers? What does Bob Gunther look like in leotards? Thank you. Representative Stevenson, do you have any closing comments?
No, Mr. Chair, I know we have a full agenda today, so I'll just say this is a great program. It's worthy of the committee's support, and thank you for hearing the bill.
Thank you. Would you like to make the motion to renew your motion to lay this over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill?
I would, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Appreciate that. House File 1184. Good morning.
Good morning.
Would you like to move your bill?
I would like to.
Possible inclusion?
Yes, I'd like to move House File 1184 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House File 1184 presents a recommendation for the biennial funding level for one of the key programs administered by DEED. This is the Redevelopment Grants and Demolition Loan Program. It's been a very successful program encouraging business growth and job creation across our state. The Redevelopment Program provides funds to improve blighted properties and bring them back to productive commercial and industrial use. The redevelopment program did not receive a separate appropriation in the 2018-2019 biennium. This program has continued to operate with fund transfers from other sources within the department, but this is not sustainable. The redevelopment program presents a real turnaround opportunities for properties that have buildings or infrastructure which must be removed for a new enterprise, so a new enterprise can be built on the site. We need to have some measure of funding for this activity in order to convert old and dilapidated facilities into productive job-creating and tax-paying properties. After learning about this bill, I looked for some of the some businesses in my area that have received some of this funding, and one of them happened to be the Fridley Stacks, which is the BAE FMC site in Fridley, which is actually where my dad and my aunt worked for many, many years. And I'm looking at it now. I remember going there with for like bring your daughter to work day, and there's the old rundown building, and looking at it now, it looks nice and brand new, and there's 13 different businesses in that facility alone, really kind of bringing that area back up to not to be such an eyesore, but still have a lot of really great businesses in there as well. So I have a witness who can speak to some of these issues, and we would be pleased to respond to any questions or following the testimony.
Good morning. Thank you for joining us. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Ben Shire. I'm the mayor of Fergus Falls, and I appreciate the opportunity to testify on the importance of these programs to rural communities as we look to grow our tax base amid challenging economic times. In Fergus Falls, we've begun the revitalization of our core downtown and our riverfront, and these programs are crucial to our success as we go to implement that plan. In Fergus Falls, within the downtown riverfront master plan study that we've completed over the last 2 years, there's three projects just within our core downtown that would benefit from these programs. We currently have one application in with deed for the demolition portion of a former dairy property that's been vacant since I was in school. It sits on 30 acres of the most prime land in our community overlooking the river, and we're confident that project is going to be successful, but this demolition program is a crucial component of the redevelopment of that site. It's a $3 million project just to get it to a green site, and the portion of this demolition loan is about $900,000 to give you, and that's just to get the site green, ready for redevelopment. We also have not right next door, but there's also a vacant mill that's been vacant for more than 30 years that would there's a developer who's purchased that property. If these funds were available, that project, we'd be ready to apply for those funds today. So we have multiple projects just within the downtown core portion of Fergus Falls, which we see as our future that we're investing in. And I see these programs as investments and partnerships between the state, local, and private developers, and I think that's how we're going to see success in our rural communities. So I would encourage the committee to support this bill, and I thank you for the opportunity to testify, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. Yes, I've been on this committee a long time, and I know this particular program has worked many things for getting projects off the ground across the state. So. President Kegel, do you have any other testifiers or other comments?
I just have the one. Want to make sure we're moving along quickly.
Is there anyone who wishes to testify for or against this particular bill? Wow. Whatever. Would you like to renew your motion for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Thank you. House file, to get this right, 1184 is, move the House file 1184 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Any discussion at all? Thank you. You are on your way.
Thanks so much.
We are moving at lightning speed today. We probably could have done one of the big bills this morning.
We don't have fiscal notes.
Reason for not doing it. Yeah, I know. I understand. Pardon? Yeah, Representative Stevenson. House File 1186, Minnesota Investment Fund.
Well, again, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I would move House File 1186 be laid over for possible inclusion in our omnibus bill. And
thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House File 1186 provides funding to the Minnesota Investment Fund, which is one of our state's best functioning economic development tools. Over the past several years, the Minnesota Investment Fund has transformed millions of state dollars into hundreds of millions in private sector investment. I have a list that I'm looking at right now, which lines out about $16 million in grants over the last few years, and that leveraged $318 million in private sector funds and created 3,300 jobs. And as I think there's information in members' packet showing that these projects are all across the state of Minnesota. You know, there are projects here in Bayport and Coon Rapids, of course, where I represent, but Marshall, Owatonna, Pine River, Red Wing, Shakopee, and Winona also on this list. So it's a program that benefits the entire state and helps us create jobs throughout the state of Minnesota. The appropriation in that we're asking for this year is $10.5 million a year. That's $21 million over the biennium. That is actually slightly less than what was in the last biennium's budget, but is accounted for with funding in the JCF and in the redevelopment program that you just heard about. So that's an outline of what this bill is about, what the Minnesota Investment Fund does, and why I think it's very important. I don't know that we have any testifiers, Mr. Chair, but I know that department staff are here if there's questions from the committee, and of course I can also answer questions.
Well, I think the department, since how this is one of the premier programs that they have, they should probably come on down and give us a good description of what this particular bill does. What it does and how it helps the state of Minnesota. Welcome to the committee.
I neglected to mention Lakeville.
Pardon?
I said I neglected to mention Lakeville when I was listing. I mean, it's a sin that I don't know if I'll ever recover from.
All right. We're going to move on here. Mr. McKinnon, could you give us the five-minute elevator speech about what the investment fund does and how it helps the state and what you do with it?
Mr. Chair and members, Kevin McKinnon, Deputy Commissioner of Economic Development at DEED. The Minnesota Investment Fund has been around since about 1985, and generally it provides loans to businesses. And the way this works is we provide funding to cities, and cities pass the money along to the businesses. Since that time, we've done obviously hundreds of loans all across the state, and in both Greater Minnesota and in the Twin Cities, and it's been incredibly successful. We leverage generally about $30 for every $1 of state dollars that goes into projects across the state. Lots of obviously new jobs, but we also take into consideration the retention of jobs that across the state that these businesses are currently have. The Minnesota Investment Fund generally is also looked at from the cities as an assistance perspective, and the reason I say that is the cities get to keep a portion of the loans that are provided to the businesses as they pay them back. This is an important component for our local communities as they have revolving loan funds and they continue to build those funds across the state. Just in the past year, as an example, or 2 years, as Representative Stevenson mentioned, we did about $16 million of grants, leveraged closer to $500 million, Representative Stevenson, and created over 1,200 jobs just in fiscal year 18 alone. we've had a really good year from a greater Minnesota perspective in the past couple. There's been both between the Job Creation Fund and the Minnesota Investment Fund more projects in greater Minnesota than there were in the metro area in fiscal year 19 or 18. We continue to promote the program and certainly work with all of our communities across the state to leverage this.
Are there any questions for the testifier? Mm-hmm. Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Could you expound a little bit on, you'd mentioned the part that the local cities get to keep a portion. I'm not familiar with that. Could you just talk a little bit more about that, please?
Mr. Chair, members, when we do loans, cities can keep 40% of a loan up to $100,000. And that was many years ago, cities could keep $100,000 of any loan that we did, and it was ratcheted back a couple times over the past 30 years or so. And today, they keep 40% up to $100,000.
Do further questions? Mr. McKenna, what kind of percentage do you, the department, keep for administrative purposes?
Mr. Chair, the department does have the ability to keep up to 3%.
3%?
We don't keep up to 3%. We don't need that much administrative money. However, several years ago, we added that provision. We had a database project, if you might recall, in about 2014, and that was the way that we were able to pay for that.
So, to further down the chain of command, there are the cities. When you loan the money to the cities. So we just had Fergus Falls here, not to pick on anyone in particular. So if Fergus Falls got a project in their particular city and you loaned the money, you gave, it's a grant, if I remember right, to the city to be loaned to the business, whichever one it is, do they have an administrative allowance at the city level?
Mr. Chair, members, they do not. Out of that portion of the money, they do not have an administrative allowance, no.
So they are required to, if the loan is for $100,000, they are required to just pass, it's just a pass-through, and they are to absorb any cost for administration. Shouldn't be much, but I mean, just want to make sure.
Mr. Chair, that is correct. What I would mention about that is, yes, we ask them. They do their own due diligence. They do their own loan monitoring. They do a lot of the collections, those types of things, and pass it along to us as well. So the cities are very engaged in this program, and generally is because of that. That's generally why they keep 40% up to $100,000.
Just as a final question, does that 40% up to $100,000 always get used for economic development?
Mr. Chair, members, today, yes, it has to. According to us, last year there was a bill that allowed cities to provide 20% of their loan balances to deed, and in return they could keep 80% of their balances, and they could spend it on anything that they wanted.
Did you keep track of what they spent that money on?
We did not, Mr. Chair, keep track of that. The reporting function of this actually goes to the chairs of the committees in the House and the Senate. So you should be receiving reports from the cities themselves.
I do receive letters from the cities, and it's we are a creative race. We are a creative race. Are there any other questions? Seeing none, we know the motion for House File 1186 to be passed with laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
I would like to renew that motion, Mr. Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. McKenna.
Thank you.
Let's see. I get to do this one? All right. Then I may as well. Okay. Who's that, Stevenson or me? Yeah, okay. I'm going to keep them both.
No, not 169. Anything 169?
Good morning, Mr. Chair.
Good morning, Mr. Chair. We have House File 1185. Please proceed.
Thank you. House File 1185 is a bill putting money into the Minnesota Investment Fund. $10,500,000 each fiscal year of the biennium, from the general fund to the commissioner. This is an economic development.
Minnesota Job Creation Fund appropriation.
Yep.
So, Mr. Chair,
I'm sorry. I just wasn't reading it correctly. And this is another one of the tools that Deed has to assist businesses in the state of Minnesota to create jobs and retain jobs. There are certain parameters to this that they have to meet. They have to have a certain dollar figure in terms of wages, certain number of jobs that they're creating. They have to declare how many jobs they're going to create, and they get paid on that particular ability to create those jobs. And that would I would leave that up to the department to explain a little bit more in depth. But with that, Mr. Chair, I would like to bring up a few testifiers in support of this. I think I have Charlie Vander, you again.
Chair Mahoney moves House by 1185 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Please state your name and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. Charlie Vander, 84, Metro Cities, which represents the collective interest of cities across the seven-county metropolitan region. Thank you for hearing these important jobs bills this morning. Economic development happens at the local level. Cities are on the front lines working with entrepreneurs to start new businesses and assist existing businesses to grow and expand. This means good jobs for Minnesotans and a growing tax base for local communities across the state. I'll testify on all three of the bills today and work through the list that the committee has already heard. So Representative Cagle's bill represents the starting line for many communities. Brownfields are previously developed land, which may or may not be contaminated. If you think of redevelopment, you think of below grade, and the state has contamination cleanup dollars, which are in the base budget and have been funded over the years. When you think about above grade and what's needed, though, that's what is accomplished with Representative Cagle's bill. So it includes building demolition, it includes ponding, it includes asbestos abatement, infill, a lot of those above grade needs that haven't been funded by the legislature since the 2016 session. The demand is statewide. The need is statewide. On recent grant rounds, the funds have been oversubscribed by 2 times and 3 times, showing the need across the metro as well as in greater Minnesota. And in fact, the grant awards are split between. So Deed issues 6 awards, 3 go to greater Minnesota, 3 go to the metropolitan region. Additionally, one of the benefits of the redevelopment grant program is its jobs 3 times over. You have demolition and site preparation jobs. Then you have the building and construction jobs for the second round, and then you have the permanent ongoing jobs for the third round. So think of redevelopment as helping jobs 3 times over. Additionally, redevelopment is the building block for future redevelopment and is really the only type of economic development for many cities. You have a letter in your packet from the city of Winona. Winona is landlocked, and the only type of economic development there is primarily redevelopment. You also have a letter from the city of Sleepy Eye. Sleepy Eye has a main street that is vital, but in order to revitalize it and provide new reinvestment, redevelopment would be a way to use existing infrastructure effectively and efficiently. Cities in the metropolitan region have a lot of opportunities for redevelopment as they plan for the future and look at increased density and efficient use of existing infrastructure. Redevelopment is a tool that they will use for previously developed lands. All communities have land that is no longer functional, and with modest state support through the redevelopment grant program, it can be reutilized and reimagined. Representative Stevenson and Representative Claflin's bills are the next step in economic development. So business development, business growth, and business expansion. Cities leave a lot of economic development at the beginning, help with zoning and land use, help with infrastructure and roads, and finally, some assist with financial tools such as TIF. But some projects need more support, and that can come from the state in the forms of the Minnesota Investment Fund and Job Creation Fund. Those funds are responsive to the speed of business. They have pipeline application process, so cities aren't waiting for grant cycles on that, and the state works with businesses to support capital investments and job growth on a schedule that works for the private sector. So in conclusion, I encourage the committee to recognize Minnesota's modest investments in economic development. When you look at other states, Minnesota does have more modest funds. Additionally, it's finite with general fund appropriations versus tax credits. The state knows how much it's spending each year. So thank you for the consideration.
Next on my list, the testifiers is Bill King. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bill King, and in 1992, I joined up with a small company over in South Central Wisconsin that had about 30 employees, and we operated an aerospace-related business by the name of Cirrus Aircraft. We had about 30 employees at the time working out of the Baraboo Dells Airport, and we were essentially asked to leave. We had 30 cars at the airport. We had about 30 employees, and they realized that that created a significant parking problem at the airport, and they didn't want 30 cars at the airport. What we knew that they didn't know was that if 30 cars was a problem, 300 was going to make their head explode, and we realized we had to move if we were going to expand and grow. So in late 1993, we began a process of identifying what might become a new home for Cirrus Aircraft and did a multi-state tour with four of our senior staff people. Four of us went and did a multi-state visit for trying to locate our expanding business. Four people at the time represented about 15% of our entire employee base, to put it in perspective for you. After searching for a new home, we decided that we really liked Duluth and Duluth, Minnesota, but there's a couple things that are worth noting. First of all, there was no aerospace manufacturing in the state of Minnesota at that time. And secondly, the Duluth International Airport, while it was had a wonderful runway and some infrastructure that made sense to us, airports are notoriously located on the most unbelievably bad soil anywhere in the world. And the reason for that, if you'll give me 1 second to give you a history, the reason for that is in 1903, the Wright brothers flew for the first time, and the first airport was located in the United States in 1909. By 1909, 1910, if you had told somebody that we're going to fly aircraft someday that weighs 70 to 150,000 pounds, they'd have laughed you out of the room, because nobody could conceive of airplanes being fast or heavy. So airports got located in a farm field because every square inch of the country was already spoken for. It was either a city, part of the growing industrial complex, or it was under cultivation. So airports ended up getting located in sloughs and wetlands that people filled in and mowed because airplanes could land on grass. They didn't need much property, and they didn't weigh anything. As aircraft continued to grow and get faster, those airports just got longer, and we started to develop. That became the municipal airports all over the world. So airports got the leftover land, and it's all loon leftovers that we are operating in on airports today. Hence, in Duluth, that meant that we had terrible infrastructure at the airport. And worse yet, it was an old Air Force base and was polluted significantly by leaking fuel cells. The land that we are located on in Duluth, Minnesota is actually a state superfund site, and between that and the poor soil condition, it was absolutely unusable in terms of being able to finance a building, our first building. And we approached the city of Duluth and the state of Minnesota, the county and the region, and the state through the MIF program and the city through tax increment and other economic development tools was able to make the site available for us to do our first development project in Duluth, Minnesota. As we sit here today, Cirrus Aircraft is now the number one producer of general aviation aircraft in the world in our class. We represent last year, as of 2018, 51% of the entire world's activity in general aviation manufacturing. That means that we produce more aircraft and deliver and sell more aircraft than all of the other producers of general aviation aircraft combined. In Minnesota, you have the number one world-leading producer of aircraft right here in the state of Minnesota, and in Duluth, Minnesota. And we're proud of that, and we're proud of what that's generated. What does that mean? That means that in Duluth, Minnesota, we started with 30 employees. After we finally figured out how to develop that site, thank you very much to the MIF funds and the other job creation activities that were available to us at the time. And we've been able to expand in Duluth and in Grand Forks, North Dakota, and down in Knoxville, Tennessee. Today, Cirrus Aircraft's manufacturing processes in Minnesota have about 700,000 square feet of space. We pay about $800,000 a year in real estate taxes and have 1,500 employees. You can imagine what that would have done to the brains of the people on the airport authority down at the Dells Airport. So today as we sit here, we're very proud to tell you that you have been largely responsible for helping to develop not just a business, but an entire aerospace industry. Because clearly the 1,500 employees at Cirrus, 1,000 of which are located in our Duluth manufacturing complex, clearly do not produce everything that goes into our product. There's certainly a multiple of that through the different businesses that support our build and our manufacturing in Duluth. Those 1,000 jobs, I'm proud to tell you, are all primary wage-earning full-time jobs with benefits. There is no job at Cirrus Aircraft that somebody can't come to work hard, have a regular job with a great future, and have a pay scale that allows them to own a home, drive a decent car, raise a family, and put your kids through college. And we're proud of that. And we're proud to have grown to become the world leader in our industry, and we hope you are too. And we're proud of the fact that at this point, although we'll grumble about it, have the privilege of paying $800,000 a year in real estate taxes on our facilities. We would like to think that the investment made by the Minnesota by Department of Trade back in the day, indeed today, has actually been a pretty good investment and a pretty good bet by the city, this region, and certainly the state of Minnesota. And we're proud to be here and proud to call Minnesota our corporate home. With that, I'd be happy to address any questions you may have, and I thank you very much for the time this morning.
Thank you, Mr. King.
Thank you.
Thank you. I can shake hands, but I'm not the
point. Representative Haley has got a question. Mr. King, if you could wait.
I can wait till all the testifiers are done.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Good morning. Mr. Chair, I would like to present Deanna or Diana. Deanna Kuhlman?
Please state your name and proceed. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Deanna Kennan. I am the Community and Economic Development Director for the City of Faribault. And I am here on behalf of the Economic Development Association of Minnesota, EDAM. Thank you for this opportunity to testify in support of the Minnesota Investment Fund and the Job Creation Fund. EDAM is a statewide organization representing over 400 public and private sector professionals involved in economic development initiatives at the state, regional, and local levels. EDAM's members are economic development professionals who utilize these important deed programs being funded in House Files 1184, 1185, and 1186. EDAM's members have successfully used each of these funds for various initiatives and are here to fully support the ongoing funding of these programs. I would like to provide some specific examples of how the Minnesota Investment Fund and the Job Creation Fund have worked well in the city of Faribault. The examples I will share demonstrate how two very different projects in both size and scale benefited from these important deed programs. The first project I'd like to tell you about is Daikin Applied. Last June, Daikin Applied announced that they would be building a southern Minnesota manufacturing facility in Faribault to manufacture a new state-of-the-art, build-to-order rooftop HVAC product, adding to their company portfolio. Daikin Applied is a division of Daikin Industries, a global company that is the world's number one air conditioning company. The company is headquartered in Japan and already has one of its 90 production plants in Faribault. The company evaluated locations in Minnesota, in Texas, where they currently own a 4 million square foot facility, and also in Mexico. They evaluated these locations as where they were going to invest $40 million in building and equipment for a new manufacturing plant and also a hire approximately 300 people by the year 2026. Ultimately, they selected Faribault, where they acquired a vacant 300,000 square foot warehouse that they are converting into a manufacturing plant for this new product line. In order to secure the project in Faribault, a multi-pronged business assistance package was developed that leveraged taxes, local incentives, and the deed programs. Daikin Applied received a Minnesota Investment Fund award of $750,000 and a Mega Job Creation Fund award of $1.6 million, which will be paid out over time based on the investment that they make and their actual job creation. The MIF and JCF programs were essential to Daikin selecting Faribault. Not only did the MIF and JCF play a role in new capital investment and in new job creation, the impact of this project and these programs is much broader. This project resulted in Daikin acquiring and converting a vacant, underutilized building. The project is allowing the company to increase production of their legacy rooftop product in their existing plant in Faribault. And this project secures the company's long-term commitment to our community. So it was very much a success story. The second project that I'd like to tell you about is Stein Air. At about the same time that the city of Faribault was working with Daikin, we were also working with Stein Air, an existing highly specialized avionics company in Minnesota. Stein Air was evaluating options to grow their business. Their existing location off of an airfield was critically hindering their ability to expand. They were seeking on-airport locations, which would allow the company to install the instrument panels and components that they manufacture and assemble into their clients' aircraft. Due to the unique nature of the products and services that Stein Air offer, there are not many competitors throughout the country, and so therefore a number of states were actively recruiting this company to relocate. Expanding in Minnesota was the company's preferred choice, but the location decision had to financially work. The company ultimately selected the Faribault Airport to relocate their business. The Faribault Airport is already home to other specialized avionics commercial enterprises. The combination of the niche businesses already located at the airport and the overall business assistance package was instrumental in Stein Air constructing a 16,000 square foot facility that will house manufacturing and hangar space. They invested nearly $2 million. They're relocating 17 highly skilled jobs, and they've committed to creating an additional 8 jobs within the next 3 years. Stein Air received a $100,000 job creation fund award. This project, while much smaller in scale than Daikin's, also has a larger impact on the Faribault community. The combination of Stein Air with our other existing highly specialized avionics industries located at the airport is creating an industry cluster that has the potential to change the trajectory of the Faribault's airport as it positions itself to accommodate additional niche avionics commercial enterprises. These two very different examples illustrate how my community is a testament to how these programs can help spark and sustain economic development and business expansion. By sustaining the funding to each program, we can ensure Minnesota is poised to take advantage of economic development opportunities of all sizes whenever and wherever they arise. Thank you for this opportunity to speak in support of these programs, and I will be happy to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Thank you.
Thank you for the testimony. Any other
testimony? We have one more testifier. Monty Hillman. Good to see you again.
Good morning. Welcome. Please state your name and proceed.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Monty Hillman. I'm the Senior Vice President of Real Estate Development at the St. Paul Port Authority and our statewide consulting business, Port Consulting. I've been asked to share with you today some of our experience with Deeds Redevelopment Grant Program and successes we've had in St. Paul in support of HF 1184. The Port Authority has been around since the 1920s. We manage the river shipping terminals in St. Paul, helping cost-effectively get commodity products from Minnesota to global markets all over the world, salt and cement and things like that up from the south, and our farm products out to global markets. In the 1960s, we began doing redevelopment projects inland. To date, we have redeveloped 21 business centers of a commercial industrial variety, a vast majority. They house 550 companies and over 24,000 jobs. It really is the commercial industrial backbone of the city of St. Paul. Since 2000, we've received six separate deed redevelopment grants, $4.75 million in total. We've used those funds to prep sites and infrastructure for economic development projects across four of those 21 business centers. They are now home to 24 businesses and over 2,800 jobs that have located on these sites that were made developable by, in part, these deed redevelopment grants. That represents $207 million in private sector investment that's been leveraged. I'll speak real quickly about our experience at Beacon Bluff, the former 3M World Headquarters on the east side of St. Paul. When 3M consolidated to Maplewood, we had 1.5 million square feet of functionally obsolete vacant buildings in our city across 46 acres and numerous parcels with aging infrastructure. In 2010, we received a $519,000 deed grant, and we built an access road off of the Phelan Boulevard that provided some great access to two well-located development sites, otherwise inaccessible from Phelan Boulevard. In 2012, we received a $356,000 deed redevelopment grant. We utilized that in demolishing some of those functionally obsolete buildings. Those two grants, totaling $875,000, attracted $87 million in part of private investment to that site. And with the one site we have remaining out at Beacon Bluff, the former 3M headquarters, we have one three-acre site left available. The development of that site will get us to our goal of bringing 1,000 jobs back to the east side of St. Paul. This state funding is critical to the capital stack for one of these large redevelopment efforts. They often are made up of a dozen or even two dozen funding sources, and the state money really helps attract the time and attention and interest of other jurisdictions, other local government sources, philanthropic sources, and of course, when properly prepared for development, the private investment that we love to see in our city and across the state of Minnesota. Through our work with clients around the state, we have active prospects in Red Wing, in Bemidji, and in Duluth, and at least two of those cities have a great story to tell for a deed redevelopment grant. And we'd love to bring our expertise from St. Paul to those communities and leverage these same state dollars to the effect that we have been able to in St. Paul. And with that, I'll conclude my testimony and be available for any questions you may have.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and committee. I'm sure we'll open it up to questions, but I want the committee to kind of understand that these small, we are never going to be the Texas where they bring their checkbook and they write out a $100 million check to bring a business into their state. We have to be creative. We have to be nimble, and these are the funds that we use to be creative and nimble. So with that, I'll open it up to the committee for questions.
Representative Hill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Mahoney, for bringing this bill forward. I just have a question to understand the MIF funds a little bit better, and can you tell me the types of projects specifically that aren't included in MIF so that we have this kind of exception to allow additional allocations?
Mr. Chair, Representative Haley, without looking at the exact statute, off the top of my head, I think it's retail, places like insurance, storefronts. I'll ask Mr. McKenna to come down and add if I'm missing some. Did I miss any?
Mr. Ida, please proceed.
Mr. Chair, members, Representative Mahoney, you're absolutely right, including sports facilities. We don't do casinos, those types of facilities either. So generally retail based are not eligible.
Mr. Chair, and we did this as well in 2017, the similar measure to allow the 20% to be paid for the 80%. Is this something where we should look at just changing the MIF parameters if we find this need repeatedly?
There's always the opportunity to put a bill forward. I think I was the one who put the retail prohibition in back when Representative Gunther put the bill together. This version, because this is a version. We've done something like MIF and job creation for since 85, I think it is, somewhere in there. And it's changed a number of different times, and I think the last time was 6 or 8 years ago. And I just don't believe that the retail jobs pay the value that the state of Minnesota should be investing in. I personally, when I did this, Representative Gunther and I put this bill together, like I said, 6 to 10 years ago. We were looking to have family supporting jobs, and most retail jobs didn't do that. So you're welcome to build support within the committee to see if you can get some support to do something like that.
Mr. Chair, thanks for that explanation. I was just trying to understand more of the background, so I appreciate that.
Yeah.
Representative Kuznick.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Mahoney, I'm just trying to understand the exemptions a little bit. So it's permissive, so if a local unit of government has a balance, they can choose to participate in this or they can continue to do what they're currently doing, if I understand that correctly?
I think you're looking at House File 1781, which is the 20%. And as they cannot, they can't use it for retail. So they have to do it, they can do it in anything that is not prohibited under Minnesota state law and the MIF or job creation. It'd actually be the MIF because job creation is a whole different set of criteria that they probably couldn't meet. The MIF restrictions that are already on there. So they again, couldn't use it for a retail sales organization, but they could use it, and some are using it for sewer and water payments.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just to kind of clarify, I wasn't really talking about what they can use the money for, but whether they choose to repay 20% of their balance and then have a little bit less restrictions on that remaining 80%. I think there's maybe like 96 localities, if I was reading the fiscal note right, that reported into the program. So out of that 96, they're not required to pay 20% of their balance. And
yeah.
Mr. Chair, I think we're still talking about 1185, and we've moved to 1781. which we haven't presented it yet.
Right.
Oh, okay. Am I jumping ahead a little bit? Okay.
Well, the testifiers. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. Well, if you want to take the question now, but I guess I'm just trying to understand that part, but we can kind of move however you like. But
why don't we keep them somewhat separate, and then we'll keep them around. We'll keep Mr. McKenna around to correct all the mistakes I'm bound to make.
Okay, no problem.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director McKenna, I look at the things that we did in 2008 and afterwards to try to claw back and get people to spend their funds that the various cities had. It's incredible that we said, we will give you so much money, but we can't fund it all. You have to do it with your funds. Those are some of the things we had to grasp to. And Representative Mahoney and I have been looking for ways to get more money to compete with other states. I am so sick of having three or four bankers in Wisconsin say, we got another one, Gunther. Another one of your businesses came to Wisconsin. We don't have ammunition to go and get industries to move to Minnesota. I'm amazed. The high taxes that we've always had seems to have very little impact. It's what we can give them to incent them to come to Minnesota. And we have no arrows in our quiver, so to speak, and we have to find out ways to improve and increase. I like what we're doing with MIF money. I think it's a great improvement. But is there any way that we can get things so we can compete with at least our neighboring states? And what would you recommend we do?
Oh, tossed you a hot one.
I'm sorry.
Mr. Chair and members, the discussion, you've obviously heard our programs are fairly modest compared to other states. We have traditionally, in my 13 years that I've been at the department, have always been in that situation. We do not compete well if you're looking at just generally the amount of money that we're making available for business assistance. That being said, we rely upon obviously our local communities. We rely upon other organizations that are participating to assist in a lot of these deals. But more so, we also rely upon generally the business community that is here in the hope that a lot of them will continue to expand. You know, that's our biggest challenge today, is that a lot of the businesses that we're dealing with, they have other options. I mean, you just heard from Cirrus, you just heard from Daikin. They didn't have to do what they did here in Minnesota. And so we use our programs to the best ability that we can. We obviously have caps and limits on the amounts that we can provide to any one business, which are generally under $3 million is the most that we can administratively award through these programs. So it is about being prepared. It is about having community preparedness. So in other words, you're investing in sites, you're investing in opportunities, and getting a lot of the front expenditures out of the way. That's a huge component. And then on the other side, how you work with the business to hopefully address their pain points. In other words, where their capital expenditures are going, is it a people issue, is it a training issue? That's where you're trying to move the needle, if you will. And our programs are fairly strategic in that way. And as I've mentioned before, they're modest, but we do our best with the tools that we have. And I would like to say that we've been reasonably successful over the past dozen years doing this too.
Representative Gunn.
Yes, thank you. I find that kind of remarkable for what you have to work with, what you can accomplish. And I give you a lot of credit for that. I just wonder what we could do if we had the resources Iowa has.
Corn, North Dakota.
Corn. There's a lot of it down in Iowa, but they also have the chutzpah to get jobs from Minnesota. And they got enough courage to do it. They get all their lottery money goes to economic development. And that wasn't enough, so they appropriated more. And I got to know the governor of Iowa, and I says, which one of our industries are you going for now? He would stop at my deli and my grocery store in Iowa. And it was really amazing. He had an answer. We're going for a pontoon boat manufacturer. We're going to put it in this town. Let's keep this town alive for the next 50 years. That was his answer. We don't have the tools to work with for you to effectively do your job. So if you could get us a list of what we can do to make you able to grow, make Minnesota grow and prosper the way we should be growing. We have the workforce. We have the education. We have everything going for us. We have a. We need the wherewithal to get it done.
All right. If there are no any other questions, will you renew your motion for House File, Mr. Chair, House File 1185?
I will, but I will add to Representative Gunther's comments. You know, Representative Gunther and I have long served on this committee. We've seen what other states do offer, do put out there. We have a fine balancing act of how much we're going to assist companies, and we're never going to compete for an Amazon, like the last particular piece, when New Jersey offers $7 billion, and we get grief trying to go above $20 million a year. We're never going to get some of these auto manufacturing companies that are offered $1 billion. And frankly, I don't think the citizens of the state of Minnesota would stand very well for $1 billion to a large corporation. So we have to use our... I was amazed talking to one business executive when he said, well, one of the things I use to recruit my middle range and upper range executives is that I tell them that almost all of my executives' children go to public schools in the state of Minnesota. And he says that is an almost unheard of. I tell them that we're 2 hours away from virgin forests or down in the southwest, I can't remember what he mentioned it, called it the driftless area. It's an interesting mix of how we get and keep companies here, but we are a miserly state when it comes to subsidizing companies and bringing them here. We have to use other tools, and I'll be interested to see which ones you recommend we try new. So with that, members, I would move to... lay over House File 1185 for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Chair Mahoney
thank you.
Moves House File 1185 be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus bill. Thank you, Mr. Chair. So we now have House File 1781. We've been hearing about MIF. Mr. Chair, please proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And I'd like to move House File 1781 for... to Ways and Means. We've heard of this particular program where the local governments with a 20% return to the state can use the other 80% of their monies in or proceeds from these particular MIF loans for any purpose that is legally allowed. This is just a continuation of this particular program. We'll see if we include it and we move it on the House floor. I'll stand for questions. such as Mr. Representative Kosnick sold.
Representative Kosnick.
I was a little confused earlier, so thank you. The author's presenting.
I'm a little foggy this morning, too.
You know? you touched on it. So this is, if a local unit of government in the city or whatnot has a balance of their MIF balance remaining, they can choose to repay 20% back and then have a little bit less restrictions on what they use with the remaining 80%, but it's their choice. We're not prescribing that they must or they have to. Is that correct understanding, Jim Mahoney?
Mr. Chair, yes, that is correct. We are not forcing them to use this at all. It's up to them, Mr. Chair and Representative Kosnick. We have found is that oftentimes it's not enough money in their accounts to really effectively bring a different type business into their particular community. The latest example that I have is that a small town had, I don't know, $50,000 in there. They sent 20% back and used the $30,000 or whatever it was to make a down payment on their sewer and water infrastructure system to reduce the cost to their the constituents that it served. It is one of the problems that small towns in greater Minnesota have, is that their sewer and water is getting old. I'm not thrilled that they're using economic development monies for that, but again, I understand it's better to use the money than to let it sit in a bank account.
Representative Cousin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Thank you for the clarification and shedding some light on that. I guess that would be my concern a little bit, too, but you've been around a little longer, so I'll follow your lead a little bit. But maybe we should put limits on when they have to use the funds by or something, just an idea for a discussion, really, but thank you for the clarification.
Chair Mahoney? Seeing no any other questions, anybody else wants to testify? Please give us your closing remarks and renew your motion. Thank you so much.
Mr. Chair and committee members, it's a good bill. Please vote for it.
Chair Mahoney moves, recommends House File 1781 to be recommended to be referred to Ways and Means. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? See none. Motion passed. We don't have any other business in front of the job, so.
Mr. Chair.
Oh, go ahead. Okay. So we're not coming back tonight since we're done with most of the business, so did you have any?
Actually, that's what I really wanted to say was that, and I don't want to throw staff under the bus. This was some very difficult fiscal notes. They were not able to get us our fiscal notes for the three bills we were going to hear tonight. So we will try another deadline. And hopefully we will not have too many night meetings, but we will be starting to have night meetings as we come along, because we have, I think, 40 bills still in our possession and some still coming. I will be more selective in some of the bills that we hear because there's no sense. The budget is not going to allow for $25 million projects right now. It's just not in the budget. So those that ask for large amounts of money are probably not going to get a big hearing unless there's they're setting up for the next biennium. So with that, Mr. Chair, thank you.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chair. With that, we are adjourned.